can meet and discuss my thoughts on it and maybe reach a decision on where to start, where should we start. Like a quick meeting, half an hour, 1 hour.
Yeah, we definitely can meet. It might be also a good idea, since it seems that we don't have as much to discuss today, to maybe discuss it today with Raju. I'm going to forward you that list right now, Raju.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, I forwarded it.
Yeah.
The thing is that I think it is in some sense an executive decision from which workload to start. I personally right now playing a lot with the sequential write workload because I find it simple and also related to the real world. There are quite a lot of situations where a system just takes as an input a stream of data and writes it sequentially in a large file. So that's why I kind of like it, but it might be somewhat biased. So I would think that it makes sense to discuss it today.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just copy-pasted some of the workloads. These are workload groups, I would call them, on the left side, because for some of these workloads, you can change the number of files and threads and the I/O sizes. So, for example, let me start going from top to bottom, but I guess we don't need to go through the whole table just to kind of give you a way to read this table. So, for example, file rread, file random read workload, we pre-create a 30 gigabyte file, and we randomly read from this file from random locations. So notice there are two variables here for this workload. One is the I/O size. What do we use, 4 kilobytes, 32, 128, or 1 megabyte? These are usually the I/O sizes I pick. And then how many threads are randomly reading from this file? Again, simplest case is 1 thread, and then might be 2, 16, 32, and so on. And again, this workload is also, I like it, it's micro workload, obviously, but on the other hand, some of the real-world applications exhibit properties like that. If you think about virtual machine disk image, it's often a big file that already exists. Assumption is that it's not sparse, and then the accesses to the offsets within this file are somewhat random. So that's kind of an approximation of that real workload.
And here you can tune the number of threads that are simultaneously issuing IOs.
Exactly. So the number of threads is, there are two parameters, as I said. One is I/O size, and the second is the number of threads.
Okay.
And each thread issues the request synchronously. So if they have 30 threads, it means there will be 30 outstanding writes or reads in this case at the file system level.
I see.
Yeah. So then there's file random write, second row, the row, this is exactly the same thing, just write. File S read and file S write are slightly different. So, and the difference is in that I don't believe there are wait a second, let me actually understand that I'm saying the right thing. Yeah. So for example, if we talk about the file sequential write workload, if we have, in this case, it makes less sense for me, for example, to have multiple threads overwriting the same file over and over again.
Yeah.
Right? So if you have a single file and you are writing it, it's usually one thread that is going to write it in with some IO size. It's less frequent than you have one thread that writes it from beginning to end, and simultaneously some other thread basically writes that file again. This is a less frequent scenario in the real life, in my opinion. So usually file S write workload, I run it only for one thread.
Okay.
Now file S read, potentially there are situations when you actually have multiple threads, so that one can be run with different threads as well. So S-read here is a sequential read and S-write is a sequential write. Now to the next two workloads, so the previous four workloads, they use one single file, so kind of limited. Now what if they have multiple files? In this case, in these two workloads, 32 files S-read and 32 files S-write, I sequentially read from 32 files, and there is a thread assigned to every single file. So this is kind of a fix to the situation that in file S write, I only write with one thread. Now, if I have multiple threads writing sequentially, very frequently we will write to different files, also relatively big files. So in this workload, there's a 1 gigabyte file per thread, and the thread, each thread just writes that 32 gigabytes.
Yeah.
Kind of also related to the real world, let's say you are uploading videos to a video server and it stores it. There probably will be a separate thread for every write operation, and it's going to write it to these independent different files and different threads.
So, I find I like the random reads and the random writes, but I find that it might be interesting for us to try and check, for example, S-write, and then try 32 files S-write, because I would like to see what are the effects of having multiple threads inside the file system at a time. And I think that one of the biggest things that we could find is that since IOs are slow, then you didn't have a problem before in releasing contention from blocking. From now that you have faster devices, then what happens when you have 32 files writing at the same time? So you may find that there are bottlenecks there. So I think it would be easy to identify those bottlenecks if we can compare like writing to one file and then writing to 32 files. So maybe we can tie different number of threads for the 32 file write and see.
Right. Well, the file random write and file sequential write up there, where you can tune the number of threads that as you like, would also allow you to control parallelism, except that you have a single file. So your file-level data structures can be contended upon. For instance, a file lock can be contended upon. So it's different than having multiple files. So the file-level contention goes down when you have multiple files.
Oh, that's true.
As opposed to a single large file where there is a file-level contention as well.
Yeah. So we can find problems in metadata, like INOD notifications and things like that, maybe? Or
yeah, you could track those things, but yeah, sure. I think, for instance, if you do a write operation, random or sequential, and there are a whole bunch of threads trying to write to the same file, there's a single lock that the write call needs to obtain first. And then only one thread can be inside the kernel doing the write operation.
Well, it depends. It depends on the file system, right?
Every file system.
Well, no. Like GPFS doesn't do that.
GPFS allows simultaneous modification to the same file from multiple threads at the same time.
Yeah, because they got key range of the file.
Oh, okay. So you have key range locks.
Yeah,
so
key range locks. Yeah, okay. You got range locks.
Okay, so GPFS is probably an exception then, but most of the file systems will have file level lock.
Well, I didn't know, but for example, I remember that. That was one of the questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But reads, I think, will have less contention when you have multiple threads. Although reads are more expensive because you have to wait for locking operation.
Yeah.
For writes, you can do, you know, just copy into the page cache and have background writes.
Yeah. Right. The other thing is that if you're doing multiple writes to the same file, they can probably get coalesced, right?
Yes. Well, you could, yeah, they could, depending on if you're doing them back, you know, sequentially. Or
yeah, when multiple threads are writing to the same file, it's important to define the pattern in which they're doing that. So, you know, here when we talk about file that's writing this table, that's basically writing from the beginning file of the one file to the end of one, to the end of the same file. And assuming that both threads are doing the same, these operations, it means that they're basically overwriting each other and only one version goes to the disk.
Well, some garbled version.
I'm sorry?
Some garbled version will go to disk, right?
Exactly. Inconsistent from the, you know, user's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The other way of defining the pattern is for this workload is where you split the big file into the regions. For example, here it's 60 gigabytes, and let's say we have 30 threads. When every thread gets a 22 gigabyte region within the file, it only writes into that region sequentially. So that's another option to define the pattern. And I feel that this is one of the reasons why I usually do not use multiple threads when writing sequentially to the same file, because all these questions arise, what pattern to use and which one corresponds to reality more. And in kind of my feeling was that in many cases when you're writing sequentially to a file, you're probably going to do it with a single thread, but if you're writing randomly, then yeah, there will be multiple threads. It, of course, is a very vague assumption and it might not be true in some situations.
Yeah, so just to go back on what is the, you know, goal of the micro benchmarks. The goal of the micro benchmarks is to trigger specific behavior so that we can focus our efforts in finding problems in specific pieces of code. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be good to for each of these micro workloads to also have that specific behavior identified. What is it that we are looking for?
What is it that we expect?
Why do we have this workload? Right? What is it that we expect?
That's an interesting question. I wonder if we have enough intuition or enough knowledge maybe even to have that information. Let's say we are talking about that sequential write workload. Let's say we ran it for 10 millisecond delay and then for 100 microsecond delay, and we will get different time to write that same file for the same file system. And then we change the file system and conduct the same two experiments, right? And then the number is going to be different for that different file system for two different latencies. And now for every of these, you know, four cases, it would be nice to understand where the bottleneck is. So for 10 milliseconds, we assume that the bottleneck is storage, so all file systems should be the same, so to say, right? For slow storage, it's the bottleneck. Now, for faster storage, the differences in file system internal code might actually play a bigger role, and then the differences might appear, and then we can explain where the differences come from. Now, it does not do what you, Roger, suggest. We're not pinpointing from the very beginning what bottleneck we are targeting with this micro workload. It's more using the micro workload to see where the bottleneck will appear for this micro workload.
Hmm. Yeah, and just wondering what the next step beyond that is.
Trying to micro work meals from the beginning to specifically tackle specific bottlenecks. That would be great, but I'm not sure that we know the file system, all this file system we play with well enough to do assumptions or with a reasonable accuracy.
I'm not saying that we pinpoint the exact line of code where there is a problem, but in general, if there is a problem, do we have a sense for what could be causing that problem, or is it more exploratory than that? Let's run the workload against all our file systems. Maybe one file system stands out, and then we go look at and try and understand that file system or as to why it could misbehave for this workload or do really well for this workload. Is that the intent?
Well, in some sense, yes. And this is what we we're doing in the very beginning, right? It's just that now the workload is simpler, so it will be easier, hopefully, to understand it. But yes, if even limiting ourselves, let's say, to a single latency, let's say pick the smallest latency we played with, 100 microseconds, excluding zero, and then run the sequential write workload for a single file for four different file systems. Well, we'll surely see different results, and I mean, we saw that for macro workloads at least. And I expect the results to be also different for this even simple workload as sequential write for the same latency as the device. And now, can we understand one Wi-Fi system for this fast storage device performs better than the other one?
Maybe we can make some estimations of what would happen instead of saying, given this behavior instead of picking a workload to try to make it react to a certain behavior, maybe we should try the workload and then analyze what would be the expected behavior of the file system given that workload.
Mm-hmm.
Since our simple workloads, we can define that. We can say, like, for example, NLFS is going to set issue writes, but time is going to go by because it's not going to issue enough writes by the time that NLFS decides to write on the actual log and then writes makes a checkpoint and then does this and does that. And you can say, like, for lower latencies, instead of waiting the whole time and then checkpointing because of time restrictions, it will checkpoint because you already wrote the maximum size, and we can maybe think, like, okay, this should be slower because it's going to write more into the, or it's going to do more checkpointing, or this is going to be faster, things like that. Maybe that's a good idea. I don't know.
I think what you say totally makes sense. To rephrase it, what you are doing, you are saying, let's build a model of the file system. You're kind of it's not a real model you're talking about, but in some sense it's a model. You know how the system behaves, so you're fitting the input workload to that model, and it predicts what would be the internal state of that file system and how it will react to that workload. And I think that's a great approach, but to have a model, you have to know the internals of the file system. So for example, you mentioned right now for NLFS, checkpointing, that it's a log structured file system. But I also noticed that it's my impression at least, that for smaller latencies, many of the performance problems will come from the details of the implementation. So if before some small things in the code did not matter, now they start to matter. And, just even how the data structures are aligned in memory, were laid out in memory, how many, switches of the threads between cores happened, or things like that, they start to matter. And now it becomes very hard to build a model that actually predicts that, because you have to model many, many aspects of the computer system. So that is my concern with you know, having the model first and then comparing it to the result that you get in the system in this specific case for lower latency. But generally, that's a great approach. I really like it.
Mm. What I'm concerned about is, like, if you try to learn the internals of the file system before, then it may take a long time before.
Yeah. No, I think I understand what Vasily is saying. It may, the having some kind of an intuition behind what to expect, given a performance problem, may be difficult. I think, you know, then we go back to our approach of, let's run all these micro workloads, see what file systems stand out and for which workloads, and then for those workloads and those file systems, we can do more fine-grained analysis by using the tools that, like the perf tools or some other kind of tools that are available to us, right? So it's more of an exploratory thing. And the reason for why these micro workloads are perhaps easier than the last three macro workloads for FileBench is they are more controlled. I mean, you can control how they behave. Maybe reduce the size of the file or reduce the number of threads or do certain other things, small changes that can tell you more about what might be the problem.
And another benefit of the micro workloads, why it's a more rigid control environment, is that you limit the number of states in which the system can be. So you know it's a single operation, it's repeating, so we know what's going on in the cache, we know when things are evicted or not. Or if we don't know, we know the code paths that are always followed, and we can instrument them and understand what's going on. So also the internal kind of the variation of the state inside of the system is limited by using a simple workload.
So what should we try to use as our initial workloads, micro benchmarks? Let's say, so you're starting with sequential writes. So we can do sequential writes and then random reads. Are they like feasible to use or not, or interesting? Random reads and random writes with more threads.
I think that's what one of the...
No, one of the things is sequential.
Sequential and random, both are there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these set of workloads seem okay to me, except the last three, which are again macro workloads, and that might not give us a whole lot as of control.
So should we use all how many are there? 4, 5, 6... Nine.
Yeah. You use all of them and see which behaviors stand out. And we'll have new plots for the as on the x-axis we vary latency again, just like we did for the file for the last three workloads. Right? And each of those first four workloads may have multiple variance depending on how you set up the number of threads.
Right. So definitely you can change the number of threads. So this work, as I said, this is a workload process that in addition, you know, adding the number of threads and IO size, they define the actual workload without already any possible, you know, misinterpretation. So if you say it's a file up random read with 32 threads with 4 kilobyte IO size, okay, that's the workload. You cannot misinterpret it anyway, in any other way, right? File random read on its own leaves you the possibilities for picking the number of threads and picking the IO size. I would suggest, so we can So this is the list, and we can try all of them and find that points that sort of they stand out. But I would say that we should not. I would try to, in this case, to do it not a broad search, but depth search. Say we pick one workload, and it can be basically any workload in this list, which we, you know, we can decide. And then for that workload, again, we don't need the help, the whole curve that we had originally in the graph. I would I would pick two latencies, very large one and relatively small one. And for these two latencies, see for this specific workload what's the difference across the file system. And then for these just few points, can we explain where the difference comes from, if it's a significant one? If there is no significant difference, that is good, and we can say, well, all file systems are same, it depends just on the storage latency, which I don't think will be the case. But even if their performances are the same, even in that case, you still can make some conclusion about why doesn't this file system run fast, doesn't it run faster? Why is it thousands of per second, but not 1500, sorry.
Right. I think the going in depth is certainly important. I think the first stage would be to have some amount of breadth so we can find out the interesting regions to explore. So if you have, you know, let's say a file random read, all the file systems do exactly the same for across all the latencies, which probably they won't. But if they do, then, you know, we should... All I'm saying is that our time is probably better spent in looking at unusual cases than in the usual, you know, something that we expect, and then, you know, we try to explain why we get what we expect.
I agree on that. I think, let me rephrase, not even rephrase, actually, change the claim I just made. I would say we should go in depth for the first unusual case to find.
Yeah.
We'll have 10 different unusual cases, and also we, you know, what we often tend to do, we have two different workloads, and we try to explain, say, hey, in this workload, things were different, maybe this or that thing changed. Well, this is somewhat imprecise, and it's better, you know, we find one unusual case, and for that unusual case, we try to understand what's going on, without even looking maybe at other workloads as much, but just by using these tools that we have that allow us to see where the CPU and I/O device time was spent and things like that.
Yeah, I agree. So, Ricardo, does this make sense to you as well? It's to find an unusual case and focus on that one unusual case to go in depth. Try to explain.
Yeah, I think that's better, because otherwise we're going to spread too thin.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. I think what happened in the past is that we found too many unusual cases and we tried to explain all of them at the same time and we lost a lot of time because of that.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is try two different latencies.
Yeah.
Per
Yeah, one high latency, one maybe 5 milliseconds and 0.5 milliseconds, let's say, or 0.2 milliseconds, something like that.
Okay.
You could also have three latencies if you want, whatever is tractable for the workload and the amount of time we have.
Okay. And then...
Run it for the file R-read, file R-write, random read, sequential write.
Like for all of them, right? And then...
Yeah, all of them, and just for one unusual finding behavior, we go in depth.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
So,
and we can test, for that unusual case, we should try to test more latencies and see what's the behavior.
Yeah. If it helps to explain anything, right? If we see that the more finer resolution will help us. Yeah, sure. It makes sense.
Let's see in details.
Yeah, I agree. Let's take this path.
And yeah, I would say that the order, I would go in the workload, peak workload first order. What I mean is not like you, let's say you pick one latency and then try all different workloads.
Mm.
Yeah, instead pick one workload, run it for all file systems and for all latencies that you decided to play with.
Yeah.
That will give you kind of one slice of the information that can already be examined for that unusual cases.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then switch to the next workload.
Okay.
And in that sense, I guess it would be interesting. It would not be interesting. I mean, one final piece of information we haven't decided on is what would be the order of these workloads you want to play with. What would be the order, like which one you will start with and then continue with.
Okay.
I guess because we are working with memory devices, sequential and random don't really matter. The sequential workloads will run faster if you have a disk-like device, and then you'll get data faster than a random workload. Right, so just the shortest job first will prompt you to go for the sequential workloads first.
Well, there is also, I think, dependency, again, at small latencies on how does the file system actually handle that two patterns even before submitting the request to the block device.
Yeah.
And also the caching for random reads might impact. So I would say all of these workloads sound fine with me, whichever would be interesting to start with first, but it's interesting, it's just important, I think, to decide on the order so that if I run any experiments with XFS, I'll try to use similar workloads.
Right. So now going back to that, I remember we talked about running the same set of operations across workloads. Did we say that we're going to postpone that until later, until we do this micro-benchmark thing, for the file bench data?
No, what we wanted to do is run the current, we need to still define a model to run like overall experiments among different file systems. But what we want to do is that what I understand is that we're not going to run all the file systems for all these workloads, for all these things. What we want to do is run this, for example, I want to run each of these for NilFS, which is the one that I'm currently focusing on. And I want to see a behavior that is outstanding. And then I want to, because if we do this for the problem of getting like overall for, we want to focus first on one
workload.
On one file system that we know that it has problems, which is what we want to analyze in NilFS and what problems does it have. So we want to pick one workload that is outstanding and we want to focus on that. If we want to get like more detailed results, for example, for the paper, we should wait until we have the model defined.
Model, yes.
Because otherwise, we're going to be repeating the tests over and over, and take a long time.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. Yes, the model. Yes. But here, I think the suggestion is to take a workload for these micro benchmarks, take a workload, and for all file systems, run that workload across two or three different latencies that you focus on, like a large, medium, and small latency. Would say 10 millisecond, 1 millisecond, and 0.1 milliseconds.
Okay.
And see what you get. and see if the, you know, the key is to compare against. We don't know if NilFS, if we just have one file system, we don't know if that performance is expected or unexpected. If we have other file systems to compare against, then we would know if there is an odd man out.
Okay.
Right? Otherwise, it's hard for you to know whether there is an odd man out.
Okay.
That's why you need more than one file system.
Well, it could happen the same thing for NilFS, right? That they have the same performance.
Irrespective of latency.
Yeah.
Irrespective of latency.
Yeah.
It is unexpected, but what if every other file system does the same thing as well?
Okay.
Maybe that is expected and our understanding about the workload is not good enough.
Okay.
Or about how this, the storage model, simulated storage device works is not good enough. So I think it's important to have at least one file system besides NilFS.
Okay, perfect.
So that you can set up what the normal is.
Yeah, so I completely agree with that. One comment here is that one more experiment to compare against that can help to identify these unusual cases is running the experiment on the raw device. So, for example, if we are writing files sequentially in a file system with one thread, essentially, the good baseline is a sequential write to that block device directly. That will give you the smallest possible overhead, right? Highest performance. And then you can see how much the file systems, different file systems, deviate from the performance of the block device. Some of them will be very close to the block device performance. Others will perform significantly worse, and that's the indication that something weird is going on.
Okay.
So you're suggesting using a real block device?
No, I'm not suggesting a real block device. I'm suggesting using the block device we use, but then run the experiment directly on it, for example, specifically for random write, for sequential write, it kind of makes sense. So we get that DM delay deployed of on top of the RAM disk, and we just sequentially write 30 gigabytes to it.
Are you saying you write to a raw device file?
Raw device file, yes.
Okay.
But device is still emulated.
Yes, makes sense. Okay, then. Yeah. All
right.
Okay, that sounds good. So, Ricardo, do you have the setup to be able to run these experiments? Do you have the kernel that Vasily has the simulated latencies?
Oh, yeah, of course I got the kernel module there.
And it works and you've tested it and all that?
Well, I did experiments on the NilFS.
Oh, yeah.
So, I shouldn't have any problems. I mean, I may have some problems with the other file systems. I didn't do overall experiments. But that would be something that I would have to fix myself, right? The other file systems.
So, you create different partitions and install one file system on each of them?
No. It's a RAM disk.
It's a RAM disk. So, you just
wipe it out. Wipe it out and then start over.
Okay. Okay. All right. Sounds good.
So yeah, and returning to your Ricardo's point about the model of the device. So I still remember that during our last meeting, people kind of criticized me for the fact for saying that maybe the model that we are using right now is still okay. There might be devices that have a really high parallelism and infinite bandwidth, but high latency. So if it is the case, then even our current workload is fine to use for that experiment for now. We will have to adjust it because we think to change the message to the cloud storage, and we will adjust it as we will gain more information from people about what is this behavior of the block storage in the cloud. But for now, that model that we're using right now is fine.
Okay.
And I feel that if you will be able to explain it for this model, if we change it later, I feel that very similar logic with certain changes maybe will help you to explain the results for a different model.
No, definitely, yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, I feel like starting right now to make the previous analysis is good. I just don't want to do like extensive of all of everything because we're going to have to repeat it. But to make the analysis, I think it's fine to just use the same one for now.
Yeah. Oh, also, you will not only apply the logic, but use the tools, the right tools. So it's the whole methodology. And if you did it once and explained it completely for one case or for two cases, even for the different model of the device, it will be much easier for you to apply the tools and the whole methodology to a different model of the device if we decide to change it.
Perfect.
All right. So if you can send me, Ricardo, when you start the experiment, the specific workload you picked, the specific latencies you picked, and that's probably it. That would be great. I'll try to run XFS workload, experiments on my side. We won't be able to compare them side by side to your experiments because we use different hardware. But some relative observations, I can dig deeper in XFS if there are some unusual situations, if it's performing better and why it's performing better. That will be, I hope, useful.
Okay, perfect. Yes, I'll start working on the experiments next week, and I'll try to get some results.
Sounds great. And yeah, if you still want to meet, just shoot me an email. I'm here in New York, so it's till the end of May, so I will be able to meet with you.
Perfect. Awesome. All right. Sounds good.
Okay, great. Thank you, Vasily. So we meet same time next week.
Yeah.